Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, September 30th, 2007, on the premier radio networks, including 31 of the best talk radio stations in the nation and XM Satellite Channel 152. This is show 392. Enjoy. I like to let the music run for a little bit. It builds the anticipation. I once saw James Brown in concert. I learned that from him. The band started playing at 9. Started chanting James Brown at 9:15. And Brown showed up about 9:45. But boy, when he showed up, we were happy to see him. A very good day to you. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. This is the show where we talk about high tech in all its beautiful, beautiful variety. Whether it's cameras or cell phones, MP3 players or home theater, this is the place. And I invite you to talk with me. Because, you know, I mean, you don't want to hear me talk for all this time. 888-827-5536 is the phone number, but I'll tell you an easy way to remember it. It's 8888-ASK-LEO. Now, don't be deceived by 8888-ASK-LEO, because it could be 8888-TELL-LEO or 8888-YELL-LEO. It could be anything. But we ask you to call the 8888-ASK number, because I don't know what's going to happen. You know, you got to be careful with these 800 numbers, these toll-free numbers. You don't know what you're going to get. So just stick with 8888-ASK-LEO. But understand, you're welcome to tell or yell as well. I've been getting a lot of yelling from people who say, you iPhone idiots, you deserve it. First, you wait in line for 6 hours to get an iPhone. Apple tells you, you've got to subscribe to AT&T. It's going to be 2 years of servitude to AT&T or else. And don't try to use a phone as an iPod or anything else. Don't try to put your own applications on it. We're in charge here. They were very clear about that from day one. There was never any doubt. And yet, I'll tell you, we iPhone nudniks, we fanboys decided that no, we didn't believe Apple. No, we thought we could put applications on it, so we did. Well, that's the royal. That's not even the royal we. That's them. They did. I mean, I put them on my phone, but it was the really slick hackers at the iPhone dev team and all around the world who worked very hard for months to figure out how to put third-party apps on the iPhone. Much needed, by the way. The iPhone didn't come with a chat application, so they put one on there. It didn't come with GPS, so they put a really cool program called Navizon on there that uses the cell phone towers themselves to tell you where you are. They didn't come with any games. Here is this great screen, this wonderful touch interface, perfect gaming platform. No games, so they put games on there, including the Nintendo emulator, so you could play your Mario games on there. All very cool. Apple, in fact, Apple doesn't even say we don't want you to do that. They say we're not going to do it, but one of the Apple vice presidents in charge of a system says, no, you know, we don't mind. That's okay. Well, a few days later, a stern warning came from Apple. We may not mind, but we don't promise anything. And then the unthinkable happened. The iPhone dev team figured out how to unlock the phone. When you unlock a cell phone, it means that the cell phone, which is normally when you buy a cell phone, locked down to a carrier, AT&T or Singular or Sprint or Verizon or. But you know, it's not illegal to unlock your own cell phone. In fact, there's an explicit exemption that allows you to do that. The copyright board even said it's okay. It's not a violation of the copyright law. It's not circumventing copy protection to unlock your own cell phone. So people worked at it. They tried. They did, in fact, unlock the cell phone, which meant people all over the world who didn't have access to AT&T, including the great state of Vermont. You can't buy an iPhone in Vermont because they don't have AT&T there, or Alaska, because they don't have AT&T there. Those poor disenfranchised iPhone-less citizens were able to unlock their iPhone with a free program and suddenly could use it with anybody. Well, not anybody, any GSM carrier like T-Mobile in the States or any of the many GSM carriers worldwide. And the heavens rained, hallelujah. People rejoiced, except for in the dim, dark corridors of Cupertino, where Steve Jobs gnashed his gnarly teeth and frothed at the mouth and said, how dare they unlock my iPhone? Bad enough, they put applications on my work of art. They modified it for their own personal use, but now they're actually not using AT&T anymore. What can we do? And he brought in his evil wizards and his magicians, and he said, magicians, what can you do to fix this problem? They said, well, sire, we could reverse it. We could send a patch down that would change everything. Yes, that sounds good, but what else can you do? Well, I mean, we wouldn't recommend this, but you could. I suppose you could send a patch down that would actually break the phone, that would make it unusable. What do you mean unusable? You couldn't use it. It wouldn't be able, you'd be broken. It'd be a worthless piece of plastic. Really? You could do that? Oh, yes, we could. Do you think anybody'd sue us if we did that? Oh, no, sire. No one would dare sue His Holiness Steve Jobs. So he did it. Now, he warned everyone. He said, oh, now I got to warn you. You've been bad. You've been wrong. You've unlocked your iPhone, and any updates we send from here on out could actually break it. And they did it. They did it on Friday. They sent it out 1.1.1. Now, I have an unlocked iPhone and a locked iPhone, and so the unmodified iPhone I updated, of course, I wasn't foolish enough. I heeded the warnings from Sir Steve, his jobbiness, and I did not update my unlocked iPhone, the one I'm using with T-Mobile. But a few did, and yes, indeed, it came about as His Holiness Steve Jobs had predicted. The phone was bricked. They call it bricked. Turned into a piece of worthless plastic. And everything was happy in Cupertino. That'll serve them right. You know, and I think there's something wrong with doing that, by the way. That's punitive. That's breaking somebody's personal property from afar. It doesn't matter if you warn them. And admittedly, heeding the warning, you shouldn't probably update it. But I know people who did by accident or who did just to see what would happen. Well, they found out. I've never heard of a company doing this before. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, when you steal DirecTV, remember that Black Friday when people who were using, and by the way, I don't do this, I pay for it, or when I had DirecTV, I paid for it. I don't believe in stealing. I'm not advocating stealing, but when people were stealing DirecTV, DirecTV sent down a signal very cleverly that made those phony cards not work any longer. What they didn't do is break the receiver. You could go back to DirecTV, say, I'm so sorry, and subscribe and pay, and the receiver would work again. Apple went this extra step, and I think this is reprehensible. They not only made the phone not work, they made it so it couldn't work. Now, we're hearing rumors that you bring the phone in and you throw yourself at the mercy of the king, Mr. Steve Jobs, and he and his geniuses will fix your phone. Now, I've only heard rumors of this. I haven't seen it happen. Most of the time, of course, they'll laugh at you. Ha ha, you fool, you knave. You got your just desserts. But the iPhone dev team's amazing. They didn't give up. And believe it or not, they figured out a way. I don't know how they did this, but they figured out a way, they think, to reverse the evil effects of Sir Steve the jobbiness. And they've been able to reverse this and bring the iPhone back. Whew. So and Steve Jobs called it a cat and mouse game. The cat and mouse game goes on. The cat has not eaten the mouse yet. But the cat has done something that I think, you know, and this has nothing to do with iPhones at this point or with Apple. It raises a larger issue. Should a company, any company, have the right to damage your property should you choose to modify that property in ways they don't like? Should they have the right to destroy your hard drive if they catch you stealing? Now, that's not my iPhone. I turn it off. Should they? I hear that, but it's not me. Maybe it's Sir Steve out front. Do you see a van out front with an antenna? Last time I talked about this, all the power went out. Strangely. Should a company have the right? Let's say the record industry discovers you have stolen songs on your hard drive. Should they have the right to reach into your computer and delete the songs? How about destroy the hard drive? Because that's effectively what Apple did. No, they have the right to sue you, to go after you in court, to pursue you in criminal court or civil court. They don't have the right to destroy your property. Only after due process does the government have the right to do that. And even then, it's pretty limited. They can confiscate it, but they can't destroy it. So when do we draw the line? When is a commercial entity not allowed to do this? And further, I think the other thing that's very important is I think that this shows you the ultimate problem with locking stuff down, with having not people want to open their stuff up, whether it's take copy protection off of music and movies or buy a piece of hardware and use it as they choose. People, that's the natural desire of people, and they have the skills to do that. And that information, thanks to the internet, is widespread now. And when a company attempts to fight that, to criminalize its users for doing that, it's a slippery slope. And unfortunately, I think what happens is you slide down that slope, you make deals with AT&T, you make deals with your partners, and pretty like the record companies, and pretty soon you're forced to do things to your customers that you really shouldn't be doing. Not just because it's bad for business, but just because it's wrong. It's immoral. May not be illegal, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but it's wrong. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Did Apple go too far? 888-827-5536. We also talked about Halo 3 this week. Waited in line at midnight, did you? What do you think? I had to wait till I finished Bioshock, but I did. And now I'm playing Halo 3. You know, it's the game industry is like the movie industry. They wait till Christmas time to release their best stuff. And then it all comes out at once, doesn't it? Let's talk high tech. I'd love to talk with you. 8888 Ask Leo. It's time. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte, the tech guy. Already the begging has begun in the chat room. Can we have your phone? You don't want an iPhone anymore, can we? Well, I'm going to keep... I have two iPhones, one locked and one unlocked, as I mentioned. I'll keep the... I should keep them both just so I can test these new unlocks and so forth. But I did buy a BlackBerry. I think I'm going to move my T-Mobile account over to a BlackBerry. I can't bear it. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Sasha wants it. He says, if you send me the iPhone, I'll work the rest of the year for free. I don't think that's a fair trade, but we'll talk about it. Oh my goodness. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Yes, there's a chat room, and as you can see, they're very distracting and fun, and it's a great place to go. Usually 200 or 300 people in there. You can get into it by going to irc.dslextreme.com. We thank DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth for that chat room, by the way. irc.dslextreme.com. And this is all linked off the main website for the show, which is techguylabs.com. techguylabs.com. Matthew's listening in Alberta, Calgary, Alberta, to be exact. Cowtown. Hello, the home of the rodeo, right? The big Calgary stampede. Hey, Matthew.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great.
That's good. It's good to talk to you finally.
It's good to talk to you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, not a problem. So I have a quick question here. I got a PowerBook G4 laptop, and I also have a PC.
Yep.
And all my PC has my music and files on it, and I also have a wireless DraftN D-Link router.
Okay.
And I was wondering if I could log on from my Mac to my PC and get files wirelessly that way.
Yes, you can. It's slow, but you can do it. You have to share the folders that you want to copy.
Okay.
And you may or may not be able to browse to the PC from the Mac. You might have to enter in by hand. There's a URL. In fact, the PC, when you share it, will give you the URL. It's // the workgroup name, / the share name, / the folder name. It's a kind of long thing. But you can enter that directly into the Mac, and that'll do it as well.
Okay, yeah, I was kind of having a problem with the workgroup stuff. I wasn't quite understanding it all.
Yeah, you have to have the same name. You have to have the same name of the workgroup to share. And usually, I would just stick with workgroup, which is the default under Windows. You can create a name that doesn't work so well with punctuation or spaces. It's best just to stick with workgroup. You know, the faster way to do this would be USB drive or a thumb drive or burning to a CD. It's going to be a little slow over a network. If you want to continue, the reason to do this is if you want to do it all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hoping, okay. Because my hard drive on the Mac is kind of small. So
yeah, okay. If that's the case, sure. It's just that even N isn't nearly as fast as a hardwired network, a fast hardwired network, not a 10 base T, but a 100 or a gigabit network. Or as fast as copying it to a USB drive and moving it. Sneaker net, we call that. So either of those ways will be faster. But yes, absolutely, you could do it. It takes a little work. I do it all the time. I have, in fact, my network setup, just so you know, that really works quite well. I have a Mac Pro. I have a Gateway XP machine. I have a HP tablet PC. And I have an Infront Network Attached Storage, or NAS. Those are all of them on the same gigabit network. They're not wireless. They're connected wired using Cat 6 cables. And the reason is when you have that fast a network with good cabling, it's as fast as a hard drive copying from one to the other. I have mapped my Mac desktop and one of my Mac folders onto the PC. It's actually on the desktop. Every time the PC boots, it's there. And I could just open that folder, copy files to it. So I move files from my PC to my Mac that way very quickly. Similarly, I can browse to my PC on my Mac. And then I use, as long as you've got this network set up, another really cool thing to do, depends on how much desk space you have, is a program called Synergy. Now, I have three monitors on my desktop. I just have to show you a picture of this sometime. The PC monitor, 24-inch monitor, a 30-inch Mac display, and then the tablet PC is a laptop, so I have the laptop open. And I'm able to use the same keyboard and mouse on all three, using a free program called Synergy, and I love this program. It works over the internet. When I move the mouse off the right side of my Mac screen, it moves into the left side of the PC screen. And wherever my mouse is, that's where my keyboard input will go. And on the tablet, similarly, I move to the left, and there's the mouse is in the tablet. So in effect, you have a really kind of, it's a very useful setup in the sense that I have both Windows and Mac running natively on Windows machines and Mac machines. But with the three screens on my desktop, it feels like a single system that I can move, you know, back and forth to. It's like an extended desktop. Synergy is a really very cool program. Now, Synergy is available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's absolutely free. On the Mac side, I actually use a Synergy control panel, a system preference pane. That it makes it a little bit easier to install Synergy on the Mac. And I highly recommend that. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. It's called Synergy KM. Again, you can Google all of this. Synergy KM. That's a system preference pane for the Mac. Okie dokie. Rick Albert coming up in just a bit. Dr. Webb. Also, our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg. And a lot more of your calls. I think Chris Marquardt, our camera guy, may join us live. He's down at the Podcast Expo in Ontario, California. Couldn't make it because I had to do the radio show. A lot of podcasters down there. More of your calls coming up too. 888-ASK-LEO. We've got a big day ahead. I want you to call in. I'd love to hear what you think about the Apple iPhone thing. And I think a lot of people just throw up their hands and say, you know, it's just an iPhone. It's just a bunch of babies. Let Apple and the babies fight it out. We don't really care. If you feel that way, I'd like to hear from you too. 888-ASK-LEO. And in the chat room, they're shouting and screaming, and I invite you to go there again as well, which is irc.dslextreme.com. More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 get net or visit them online at dslextreme.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. He is Dr. Webb, the Web Guy. Every week, Dr. Webb, Rick Albert, as he's known. mild-mannered Rick Albert, who turns into Dr. Web on the show, joins us to talk about some cool website or another. Actually, this isn't a website. This is a program that gets its data from the web.
That's right. Hi, Leo.
Hey, Dr. Web.
Thought we'd talk today about Google Sky, which is the newest version. I guess it's just an enhancement, I'd have to say, to the venerable Google Earth product.
Yeah. In fact, if you have Google Earth, can you just update it to do Google Sky if you get the update?
Exactly. And once you update it to the newest version of Google Earth, and under the View menu, there's a new selection called Switch to Sky.
Oh, neat.
That's how you get into the whole presentation of the heavens, which is what Google Sky is all about.
So what do you get with Google Sky? I mean, do we get a map of them on the moon? I mean, can I say, what's the driving directions from my house to the moon?
They haven't added that yet. I think that's, MapQuest is hurriedly working on that.
So yeah, really.
Google Maps will be right on their tail, no doubt. I think you drive from, where did they land back in 68?
The Mare Tranquillitatis. Yes. Tranquility Sea.
You got a good memory for that, Leo.
I watch that stuff, passionately. I've memorized every moment of it. We interviewed Buzz Aldrin the other day on one of our podcasts.
And oh, great.
It's the second time I've interviewed Buzz Aldrin. And it's just, you feel like you're meeting, Vasco da Gama or,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, this is historic person, probably the most historic person I'll ever meet. So it's kind of neat. Anyway, sorry, I sidetracked you. How do we get to that? I don't know.
I just remember the Ali G interview of Buzz Aldrin where he kept calling him Buzz Lightyear.
I didn't see that, but that sounds
hilarious.
Very funny. Buzz is a very good-natured guy. I'm sure he took it with a good sense of humor, I hope, anyway.
So anyway, now in Google Earth, you can do Switch to Sky, and what you get is the entire heavens. You get all of the, you get a way to view the stars and planets in a very accessible, easy to use, great, as usual, great interface from Google. And it allows you to explore the universe. And when you first view it, you get kind of a, bland sort of view of, a whole bunch of dots on the screen. And then you can turn layers on and off just as you do in Google Earth. And the layers include constellations, includes information about planets, information about notable galaxies and that sort of thing. And they all start to kind of be represented on the screen or, highlighted on the screen. And then you can click, just like in Google Earth, you can double click on a particular point and it will zoom in closer. And then you can use the normal magnification tools to get closer or to move away. There's a lot of information that's embedded in the representation of the universe. And as you get closer to certain things, little windows pop up that allow you to explore more and more deeper and deeper into whatever you're looking at. They've got some of the layers include pictures from the Hubble telescope. So it's a way to
I love that feature.
Amazing images that come from Hubble. And there's tours, just like Google Earth. You can, download tours from websites. You can use some of the tours that are built into the product itself. And it will then kind of smoothly move from one amazing part of the solar system or the universe to another. And allow you to drill deeper into whatever you might be interested in. They've put together 1 million different photos that were taken from different sources of the sky and mashed or, kind of blended it all together so it's one smooth kind of representation of the heavens.
Sounds really cool. I'm going to have to play with this some more. Very neat.
It's a time sink,
That's the problem,
absolutely guarantee. If you've got 10 minutes to kind of explore it or 15 minutes to kind of poke around and try to get a handle on what it's all about and what its capabilities are, you'll, get up 40 minutes later having learned stuff about galaxies and nebula and the lifetime of stars and so forth that you never thought you'd be interested in. But once it's presented to you in a way that's incredibly realistic and gives you a sense that you're on this magic starship or spaceship that can fly through the universe at the touch of a button. It's really fun. Really, really fun.
Yeah, I have to say this is in a category of adult toys, you know, things that you put on your computer and that you just end up getting drawn into. They're not games. They're just really amazing. Very cool. Google Sky. It's part of Google Earth and free for download from, it's not sky.google.com. I think you still have to go to earth.google.com to get it, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's just, it is the basic newest version of Google Earth that incorporates this.
Very good, Dr. Webb. We thank you for your time and your visit with the heavens. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Leo.
Dr. Webb. Rick Albert. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. And back to the phones we go with Denise, who is listening in Valencia, California on the great KFI. Hello, Denise. How are you today?
I am great. And yourself?
Well, wonderful. What can I do for you?
Yeah, the other morning I went to turn on my computer, and on the monitor I got a circle with a slash. And so then I just turned it off using the tiny little button, and then I turned off my internet, and then I turned it back on, and then it was fine. And I was just wondering what that means, the circle with a slash.
You have a Macintosh.
Uh-huh, G4.
Yeah. So the circle with a slash... You know what, I'm going to have to, I've never seen that one. They have a number of different error logos they put up when the computer can't boot. I'm not sure what the circle of the slash means. Sometimes you get the question mark. That means I can't find an operating system. The circle with the slash. Let me see if anybody in the chat room has seen that one. Because I haven't seen that. It probably means, you know, some sort of error. I'll have to look up on the Apple site. They have all the error codes. Not
well,
codes, but
this,
pictures listed.
I did have this software called Tech Tool Pro, and I just ran it through.
That's
everything.
A good program. What did it say?
Huh?
What did it say?
It said it passed, and then it corrected a couple of errors in the Finder and... You know,
I don't think that's a serious error message. I wouldn't worry about it. However, anytime a computer does something, anytime a computer erps up like that, it's a good idea just in case to what? Back up, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it could mean that maybe the hard drive's getting a little flaky or something. When you saw this stop, you know, this circle with the slash through it, it was on a gray screen. There was nothing else going on.
Right.
Yeah. That's a boot up message. And so had you shut down the computer and then when you turn it on, you saw this?
No, it was cold. And so I just started it up and that's when I saw it. And so I just, the only way I could turn it off is to use the tiny little buttons that are underneath.
Yeah, you reset it basically is what you
did. Yeah. And then I turned off my internet because I usually have my internet modem on. And I just turned it off because I wasn't sure if that was maybe making the circle with a slash. And then it started up fine, you know. So I don't know if that has to do with the internet being on.
No. It's a problem in the boot up. It probably...
Boot up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've really got to search for this one. Here it is. Okay. Let me see. This is an Apple site. It's a called a okay. It's a kernel panic. So what it means is the operating system itself crashed, which is rare on a Mac, but can happen. Usually,
but I have Tiger on the newest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at it. It's funny that we make a big deal out of this now because, frankly, this used to happen all the time on computers, right? But it's so rare on your Mac that you're freaking out because you've seen it. It's nothing to worry about. It's nothing to worry about. It's a kernel panic. Let me just look here. Apple, I will put a link in the show notes. I found Apple's discussion of this. It says a broken folder or prohibitory sign. That's what they call that circle with a slash appears during startup. That means a kernel panic occurred during startup. Kernel panic means that the operating system couldn't go on or a miscellaneous startup issue occurred. It's not very specific about what's wrong. If you rebooted and everything was fine, it's just, you know, cosmic ray hit the system right at the wrong time. It's nothing to worry about. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Don't panic.
Thank you, Dr. Leo.
It's okay, Denise. Yeah, as I remember now, I'm trying to think. I think I've seen that once or twice myself. More often on the Mac, when a kernel panic in a Unix operating system, which the Mac is the most serious error. It's the blue screen of death for Unix systems. It means something so bad has happened that the computer can't go on. You see it more often, frankly, when the computer's operating, and one hopes you don't see it often, but the whole screen goes gray, and then a gray, lighter gray message pops up that says, you know, you're dead, and it puts it in a lot of different languages, and it's a pretty scary thing when you see it on the Mac. There's no recourse. Everything, when that happens, everything is dead. You just have to turn your machine off and on again. The way modern operating systems are written, and I include Vista, XP, OS X, and Linux in this, a program itself can't usually do that. It has to be a driver or a hardware failure, because in order to get a kernel panic, a serious blue screen of death, you have to write to an area of memory that called ring zero that is not available to programs. You have to have something really seriously go wrong. So it usually means a driver error or a hardware error. In your case, it could have been something like the voltage fluctuated slightly. Seriously, that'll cause it. Could be any number of things. So at some point during the boot up, it just got to a point where it couldn't go on. The fact that you turn it off and on again means it's fine. But again, anytime you have some serious error like that happen, it's a little ping from the operating system gods. Ping. Maybe you should make a backup just in case. Maybe the hard drive is flaky and then it fails suddenly. You had that one warning. Now, if it fails, no big deal. You put a new hard drive in, you restore your backup, you're okay. You have a backup, right? Uh-huh. In fact, I'm going to declare every week at this time, backup day. While you're listening to the show, just make a backup of your most important documents, the things you can't afford to lose. Put it on a CD or a DVD, an external USB drive, thumb drive, depends how much there is. Make sure your photos keep backed up, of course, and your music and things you can't replace. Make sure you're making a backup. And this would be a good time to do it while you listen to the show. More of your calls coming up. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. You post pictures on Flickr or on the internet? I know we do all the time. I have all sorts of pictures up there of my friends and my family and myself. And then, you know, I share them and I make them public. You got to be careful what you do with that. There have been a couple of instances lately of pictures on Flickr being used by advertisers or blogs. And it can be kind of a shock. An American family is suing Australia's Virgin Mobile phone company because pictures of their teenage daughter, which were on Flickr, were put up as ads in Australia for Virgin Mobile. Under the, unfortunately, embarrassing, very embarrassing, I think, slogan, dump your pen friend. And there's a picture of her. She's 16 years old, so there's a problem there, of course. You've got to get permission if you're a minor. They didn't credit the photographer. Now, a lot of times when you post stuff on Flickr, you post it publicly, you have the option to state a license. You could say it's copyright. In fact, I think that's the default, which means they shouldn't be able to use it at all. Or you can state other licenses, including the, you know, public domain. You could say anybody can use this image. In this case, I think the photographer was Creative Commons. But there are a variety of Creative Commons licenses, including the one I use, which says can be reused for non-commercial purposes only. Now, the fact that it's posted publicly on Flickr and licensed to Creative Commons, I think might undermine their lawsuit. They're claiming libel and invasion of privacy. I think that's probably not the grounds for the suit. You might say you violated our license, our Creative Commons. But according to Virgin Mobile, they allowed commercial reuse on the website. The problem is that it wasn't Chang, the girl who posted it. It was her friend. And this is something that raises a really interesting question. Should you post pictures of your friends up there? And then if you do, how can you, you've got to be careful about the license. Is it okay? And what about your kids? What about underage minors? What about your babies? The other situation happened when a father, who's a very good photographer, got very angry at a website for using a picture that he had posted of his baby on their blog post. The website was Babbel. Babbel apologized, offered him $100 in credit. They did, in fact, violate the license. They said it was an intern who did it. But there it is, a picture of his baby up on some blog. I don't know if he has much ground since he did post it publicly. Just something to keep in mind. When you put your pictures up on Flickr, you have the choice to make it public or not public. And maybe if there's other people in those pictures that might not want to be used in a cell phone ad in Australia, maybe you should maybe make them not so public. Bob, Cincinnati, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Leo. You kind of cut in there a little bit strange. It was hard to tell whether or not you were talking to me. I apologize.
I'm talking to you. I think your phone is coming in and out, though, a little bit. I don't know if that's at our end or yours, but let's muddle through. What can I do for you?
Well, Leo, let me ask you, how do I find out if a company really does exist it's not a vapor company? When I go to their website, I want to be able to find them for real, where their address is, telephone number.
Interesting.
I am very interested in this new, this product that's coming out, and they're asking for $500 to lay out for pre-order on something. And they say, send it here, but there's no telephone number, no address. You just send it to them via the web.
I'd be very, very skeptical, and that's more so than you're exactly right. Since there's no brick and mortar location, always be extra skeptical about websites. Now, here's what you can do. There's a couple of things. First of all, there is a BBB, Better Business Bureau online. It's bbbonline.org, where they actually talk about whether website is trustworthy, whether there've been any complaints or not. It's the U.S. though, and Canada. So if this website is overseas, is not in the U.S. or Canada, they're not going to have any information on it. And by the way, at that point, I'd be really skeptical because it's very hard to pursue somebody if they're offshore. The other thing you can do is you can figure out at least who their registrar is and possibly get some registry information. And you do that using something called Whois. Whois. And there are a number of Whois sites. You can use betterwhois.com. That's kind of the one I'll use because it goes through all the domain registrars. So you enter in the domain name. So I'm going to enter in leoville.com, for instance, my website, and do a search. And it'll go through the registry records. Now, here's the problem with that. It's possible that they have hidden that information. I do that because I don't want any. Normally, when you register a domain name, you give them your phone number, your address, your location. And because I'm a public figure, I don't want that information publicly revealed. In the first few websites I registered, it was, in fact, publicly revealed. that was a little scary. So if you go to leoville.com now, you'll see the registrar is a company in Vancouver, Washington. It's not me. It's domains by proxy. And you contact them, I think it's domains by proxy. You contact them, and then they will forward that information along to me. If somebody's using that, though, and they're a business and they're asking for money, I wouldn't give them any money. What you should find is a legitimate business address and a legitimate business phone, which you can call and verify that that's them. So if you're a business and you're trying to get people to give you money on the net, I think it's very important that you have a publicly visible domain registry record. The other thing, of course, if they're asking for a credit card, they should have a secure HTTPS connection. And you should be able to look at the certificate, and the certificate should say who they are. So those are three ways to protect yourself online. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, no matter what time it is, it's time to talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here, to talk about the stuff that changes the world, the bits and bytes of computers, the internet, the cell phones, the camcorders, the home theater. Our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, coming up in just a little bit. But most important to this show is you. You are callers. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to talk about anything that's on your mind, whether it's a recommendation, a question, a suggestion, a criticism. I'm here for you. I'm here for you, man. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go to Rochelle in Orange County, California. Hey, Rochelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, what is it, afternoon already, I guess?
Have you been on hold since 8 in the morning? I apologize.
Not quite an hour.
Oh, hey, that's nothing.
You're not kidding. Any rate, I purchased a 2007 eMachine CPU over the summer.
Okay.
And, of course, it has the wonderful 2007 Vista program.
Isn't that nice?
I know. Somebody installed Outlook 2003 because I think it was Windows or eMachines. One or the other told me that 2003 is compatible with Windows 2007.
With Vista, yeah. Yeah, it is. You can use 2003 with Vista.
Correct. And it's my email. This is Outlook. This is not Outlook Express.
Right.
And when I... Let's say I initiate an email to you, a new one, and I type it, da da da, and then I send it. If I either go to initiate another one, or I open another email, go to reply to it, or forward it, all of a sudden, the first line of the previous email pops up on the monitor.
In the message, or just kind of randomly?
The message. I can't, where you would write, you know, hello so and so, you know, glad you sent your email, you know, when you're replying, it just pops up. I can be, when I begin typing, it does erase or go over.
Oh, okay. So it's not like the text is there, it's just kind of a ghost of what you typed last time, and as soon as you start typing, it disappears.
Yes, and I've even tried to wait 2-3 minutes before I open another email or initiate one to either, you know, send a new one, reply, forward, whatever. And I thought that this was exclusively Outlook problem. And then it started to happen once in a blue moon on Word.
Huh.
Outlook 2000.
Hmm.
So it's really weird.
That's kind of an odd thing to have happen, isn't it?
Yes, and I've had some computer gurus look at it, try to help me. No one's ever heard of it.
So let me make sure I've got it in my mind. So you type something in a word processor. You type it. Now, is it only when you type it in Outlook, or could you type it in Word and it will appear in Word?
It will happen in Word, too. And Outlook, matter of fact, I think it's... Matt, what is it called? Word Editor that I use?
Oh, okay. So you're using Word in Outlook. All right. So I'm not going to worry about Word. This is an Outlook issue.
Yeah. It's mainly Outlook, but it does happen in Microsoft Word. Every once in a while, I'll type a line.
Okay. The first thing I'm going to suggest, let's try this.
And the line before will appear.
First thing I'm going to suggest is to stop using Word as your editor in Outlook.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think that's a good idea anyway. It slows things down and doesn't really add any capabilities. The problem is you can do stuff in Word that your recipients can't see anyway. So what I would suggest is that's a setting in Outlook.
Correct.
Yeah. So go in Outlook and stop using Word as the editor. See if that fixes it.
Well, what would I use as the
Outlook has its own editor. You don't need to use Word as the editor.
Oh.
They do that as a, I don't know why they do that. It's
okay.
They've always done that. And I guess it's for people who want Word's functionality in Outlook. And
yes.
If you're sending it to another person who's using Outlook, then okay. But I don't think there's any real advantage to that. So I would just say use Outlook's editor, which is, by the way, pretty close to Word. See if that fixes it.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, there are some tests, if I were there, I would do. And maybe these computer gurus you had in tried this. Is that text on the clipboard? In other words, if you type Control V, does it paste that ghost text in?
How funny. I've never been able to do that.
Yeah, I'm just curious if that's where it's coming from, is what I'm saying. And no. Also, when you start a new message...
Your email.
Yeah, when you start a new message...
Control-C from one and then go
no,
into
No, I know,
next.
But I'm wondering if... I'm just trying to get some diagnostic information. I know you're not intentionally copying it, but I'm wondering if it's living on the clipboard. I'm wondering where it's living.
It's a clipboard. I don't think it's on... whatever the other thing is called. I'm not a guru.
Let me ask you one more thing. When you start a new email, what button do you use to start a new email?
Oh, the new?
Okay, good. You're not using reply, forward, one of the buttons that's... See, if you use...
I open an email if I'm going to reply and forward it.
Okay. But when you start a new message with the new button, with a compose button, okay. it still puts that text from the last email you sent in there. It's a very odd situation.
It is.
Very spooky.
Yes.
Well, what I'm thinking is, first of all, let's turn off that word editor. It could be Word is somehow preserving that information.
Okay.
It could be, because it's not actual text, but a ghostly image.
Correct.
I'm thinking it also is a driver, could be a driver refresh error. So the other thing I might want to do is... make sure you've got the latest video drivers. Now, this is something you may not want to do on your own. You might want to get one of your local...
Video, V-I-D-E-O?
Yeah. You might want to get one of your local gurus to do this.
Yes.
But just tell him, look, I think Leo says that it sounds like there's a video driver issue. The other thing is you could have, and I don't know what software you're running, so you could have software on there that's supplying that text for some reason automatically. But I'm thinking it's probably a video driver issue, since it's not real text. It's just kind of a ghost of something that was on the screen before. I'm thinking the video card is a bug in the video card. You have to understand how a video card works. It stores in memory the bits that are going to go on the screen and then blasts them out onto the screen. And it sounds like it's not clearing that memory fully, and so when it blasts those bits out, there's leftover bits from previous screens, is what it sounds like to me. So I think that would be classified as a bug in the video driver, and I think in all likelihood, a bug like that would have been fixed by now. So what I'm saying is video driver is the software that tells the operating system how to communicate with the display, and I think that software is damaged. So tell your tech guru to look and see if eMachines is offering an update for that video. With the eMachines, of course, you don't have a separate video card. It comes on the motherboard. So it would come from eMachines. It would be an update for that computer. It might not even say video. It might just say it's an update for that model. You could do it yourself by looking on the eMachines site or gateway site. That's a mystery. Anybody ever have that happen to them and want to help Rochelle here? 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go to Santa Clarita, California. DC's on the line. Hey, DC. DC? Or is it OC? NEC. Hello, Santa Clarita. Nothing there. It's a mystery. How about Paul in Columbus, Ohio? Hey, Paul. Well, I know it's not me. Is it the way I look? Let's try again. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Now we got you. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, this is Paul.
Yes.
Okay. I had been listening to your video broadcast and miss it, but we don't have it, so okay. So I went back.
Let me explain real quickly what that was. I, as an experiment, foolishly started streaming video from the... I thought, oh, it's like another webcam. It had audio attached to it. And the problem was the radio stations quite reasonably said, what are you doing? You're broadcasting the show, and people aren't listening to the radio. So... in deference to the radio stations, which are very kindly broadcasting this show, I turned off the audio. You can still see the video, but you don't hear
right.
My dulcet tones.
And the neat part about it was that we got to hear the stuff between when.
I'm still doing that. After a little while on the commercials, I'll talk, and before and after the show, I'll talk a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
and I agree. I think that's pretty cool, and I'm trying to think of a way to do that without harming the radio stations. And I think what I might do is an after show.
That would be great.
Yeah,
because we did really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's informal. It's a way to talk. Yeah,
right. But I went back to the KFI feed.
Okay.
And I also noticed this with the audio part and video on the on the from the webcam, but I was getting a lot of dropout. It would, you know, would say it was buffering, but
yeah,
then it would,
that's a bandwidth issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, FOSSA, but it shouldn't be on KFI because that feeds only 35K.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. It may be that the it's not your bandwidth issue; it's their bandwidth issue.
Well, what happened was I called AT&T to see, you know, because sometimes it was perfect and sometimes it would do this.
Right.
Well, their suggestion was, you know, reboot your modem and reboot your router.
That's because that's what it says in that notebook.
Yeah,
customer
well,
having problem, reboot router, reboot modem.
I did it and it worked.
It did.
Okay. And I did the same thing today and it worked after it was dropping in and out some.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering is the thing about it is I wouldn't think I would have to do that every day.
I wouldn't either.
So I'm wondering what kind of a setting or adjustment I could look at or possibly make to keep that in better shape.
First, I have to understand why that works. To be honest with you, they wouldn't think it would. Let me cogitate. Let me contemplate, Paul. Think about this, and I'll come back. We can talk a little more about it. Maybe somebody can make a suggestion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Conferring with my friends in the chat room. And Mike B., our chat moderator, said he had the same kind of ghosting issue that Rochelle had before, and updating the video drivers did fix it. Another person suggested, and this is actually not a bad idea, to disable video acceleration. That's a setting in the display properties. And turning that off, that's just kind of voodoo, but I'll tell you what that setting does. When video acceleration is turned on, then when video is played back, it doesn't go through the video card. It's blasted right onto the screen. It's something called overlay video. So, and I frankly wish that the settings were more descriptive of what's actually happening. I understand they want to make it easier, but what it does is it makes it more opaque. So they say turn off video acceleration. What they should say is turn off overlay video. But it is possible that overlay video could be part of the problem there. I do think updating your video driver, Rochelle, will help. Now, let's get to Paul's very interesting conundrum. He's listening to streaming audio, the show, as it happens, and it buffers a lot. But when he reboots his modem or his router or both, it fixes the problem. Now, what happens when you reboot your modem or unplug it and plug it in again is you're telling your cable company to, you know, kind of refresh it, to give it new settings and so forth. It's interesting the cable company told him to do this. I'm wondering if the cable company itself is doing something over a period of time listening to streaming video, for instance, it reduces the quality of signal. Maybe as a way to spread its bandwidth more evenly through customers. A stream looks just like a download to the cable company. You've gone to an address and you've got a stream of data coming in. It's just like a big download. And I could see that they might be doing something, for instance, when they see a big download happening, they just slow it down a little bit just because that they don't want you to hog all the bandwidth. Unfortunately, internet service providers, particularly the big cable companies, are doing a lot of interesting things that behind the scenes to your signal. So I'm thinking that might be it. One way to diagnose this, Paul, would be to just reboot your modem and see if that fixes it. Have you tried that? Maybe we lost Paul. Are you there, Paul? I guess we lost him. That would be one way. And if that works, then yeah, it's a cable company. They're doing something interesting, something fishy. Could be your router's doing something like that as well. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle. Starting over improves your bandwidth for some reason. And so what you would see as a concomitant of that is that your bandwidth would decrease over time. But I'm not sure exactly why that would be, unless the cable company's doing it. Interesting, they recommended it. I first assumed it was just the usual, you know, stock answer that you get from a poorly trained tech support guy. They'll just say, well, have you turned the machine off and on again? Have you rebooted? That's just, you know, we do that first. Norm, San Francisco, listening on the great KGO. Hello, Norm.
Hey, Leo. Got a little problem. A couple weeks ago, I was having a problem with my tower, and I went out and I bought an external hard drive. I installed the software, and I think, you know, I watched the files move. I'm not sure about that, but anyway, after I had done that, I started getting messages coming up. My desktop wasn't, just all sorts of different messages. Not just okay.
Error messages.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'd shut it down and, I'd, you know, disregard the error messages, and I seemed to be able to run everything okay, my apps. But at the same time, and what caused me to get the external hard drive in the first place is I started to hear noise, I guess, my internal hard drive.
All of these are symptoms that your hard drive's dying.
Right. So I went ahead, and that's what prompted me to do that. So anyway, last week I was listening to your show, and you were mentioning recoverable hard drive. Start to hear it working really hard and everything.
Yes.
I'm wondering. My first question is, and then I saw the bad sector. The blue screen comes up and says bad sector. It's got to do a disk check because it's shut down. I couldn't get it to come up anymore. So I couldn't get my operating system up anymore. And
yeah, your hard drive's slowly failing. So you have two choices. It's not you. It's not your operating system. It's your hard drive. And this is a case where a program like SpinRite would be a good choice if the hard drive's not really dying to go through and refresh the drive, map out any sectors that can't be fixed, and you might get more life out of it. But I have to say, whenever something like that happens, remember, SpinRite's $80 or $90. A new hard drive's not much more than that. So when something like that starts happening, because hard drives are so cheap now, I often will just say, okay, get a second hard drive, copy everything over. Continue to use the first hard drive, maybe reformat it just to see if it'll be okay. Not use it as a boot drive any longer or as anything critical, but just keep it around. But as you know, again, that's that little warning from the computer gods that something's not right.
Right, and I went to the extreme. I bought a whole new system because I didn't have my system was probably almost 7 years old now anyway,
yeah.
And I built as far as I thought I could go with a gigabyte hard drive. So
You needed a new system. You absolutely did. I think that's a perfectly reasonable response. Sometimes the computer gods just say it's time for a new system. I think that's what they were telling you. Our gadget guru coming up, Ron Rosberg. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. We had two great mysteries there. Two good computer mysteries. One from ghosting text on the screen. I think I'm pretty convinced that's a video card issue or a video driver issue. And then this most recent one where the bandwidth just slows and then gets better when you reboot the modem. That's what I love this show. Just mysteries. And if you have a suggestion, if it's happened to you and you have a thought, they're saying in the chat room, maybe it's just a bad modem. Could be that. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Right now, though, it's time for the gadget guru, Ron Rosberg. Hello, Ron.
good morning or good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are.
You can't resist it, can you?
Well, I started to say good morning. I realize, you know, I'm in a different time. It's actually good afternoon anyway.
Yeah, it is here. Yeah. Where we are, it's the afternoon.
And I've got eight NFL games on my screen here, so I'm having a ball.
Is that Sling or is that DirecTV?
No. That's DirecTV, you know, the game zone, so you can watch eight games at one time.
You can watch eight at once?
Eight at one time.
And how do you follow eight games at
once? It's a good thing I'm a multifunctional person.
Yeah,
you know,
it's for the ultimate ADD.
It's very hard. You could ask me any score and I can't tell you.
I have no idea, he says.
All I could do is I see him running back and forth.
There's a lot of little people going, rah, rah. Unless you had a gigantic screen dividing your screen into eights.
Well, I do have a 70-inch screen.
You know,
on a 70-inch screen, it's not bad. It makes them, you know, like 19-inch sets all over the place. It isn't bad.
So I wanted to tell you, I was so mad at Apple. I didn't brick my iPhone because I was smart and not. I'd hacked it, but I didn't update it. So I have still two working iPhones, one hacked, one unhacked. But I was so mad, I decided, you know what? I'm going out and getting a Curve and putting my T-Mobile chip in the BlackBerry Curve. You like the Curve, don't you?
Yeah. Curve was neat. I'm using the 8830, but I have a Curve here.
The 8830 is Wi-Fi and GPS.
No Wi-Fi. No Wi-Fi. Ah. Yet. The new ones that are coming out, I think it's going to be called the 8820, Leo.
That'll
have
Wi-Fi. I'll
see one of those soon. That's going to have Wi-Fi. But again, I like the Sprint and Verizon EVDO, or as you call it, EVDO. Experience. So I use.
You're right. It is nice to have the EVDO, and I do have a Verizon account. I probably should have purchased the 8800, but I got the 8230 because of the built-in Wi-Fi.
Gotcha.
On T-Mobile, okay. And I wanted to use it on T-Mobile. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, is it, Mr. Gadget Guru?
No. That's we're going to talk about some of the. I actually have four products today, and so I'll go rather quickly.
Ooh, we better get going.
I'm an auctioneer, and can do this thing quick. So hit your replay button if you don't understand me. Anyway, okay. First time I'm playing around with a new Canon Pixma MP970 photo all-in-one. Now, let me clarify, too. I don't really like when companies call things all-in-one, which they really aren't all-in-ones if they don't include a fax. So this one is almost an all-in-one. It does everything but fax, okay? So
nowadays, okay. You know, I wonder if people care that much about fax capability.
Well, down in one of my offices, yeah, I have one there that has a fax, and I use that. And in my office also, I have the Canon. We talked about the MP830, which I love, and that has fax in it. So, you know, for an extra 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, you get a fax machine. It makes it really convenient. Not that I use it for really incoming faxes, because I use like e-fax like you talked about, but I do use it for outgoing. But this one does not have it. I'm using this one up at the lake. But let me tell you, I have had a 950, and the one problem I had on that was kind of a slow machine, meaning when you just turned it on for the first time or whatever, you're trying to do some color pictures or whatever, it just took a long time. So they fixed that up immensely here. So waiting a long time for startup will be a thing of the past, thanks to Canon's quick start feature that allows the user to start using the all-in-one in a matter of seconds. So as soon as you press the power button and watch your printer start up automatically.
Yeah, I get now, so sick of the printer going
right, checking every, now this has seven cartridges in it, so when it checks seven cartridges, sometimes it would take a long time.
I do
time.
Like the output on the Pixma. I have a Pixma 4000, an older Pixma. It's a nice printer.
This has got a 3.5-inch TFT screen on it with an easy scroll wheel. And the features it has also, if those people are still looking for a unit to scan, let's say, their 35-millimeter negatives, this comes with the film adapter unit. And it has extremely high 4800 by 9600 DPI optical resolution. So you could scan your old slides, negatives, and prints and add them to your digital library. And this machine, you'd think, you know, $400, $500, $600, it's $299. Okay, so it's a great price. It uses the seven cartridges, so you only have to.
Do they still one they still charge $4,000 a gallon for the ink?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
That drives me crazy. I wish somebody would just, you know, just say, well, okay, we're going to give you cheap.
I am going to be looking at a printer probably, hopefully in a couple of weeks, that they say their ink is less expensive.
But it's only $2,000.
I highly recommend, Leo, for people doing. I'll say this again. Doing a lot of printing, mainly in monochrome or black, get yourself a $79 or $99 laser, and it's really the way to go. And then when you want color, if you're doing color pictures and stuff like that, this is great. So this is the Canon Pixma MP970 photo, almost all-in-one printer.
That's one. Yeah, you got three to go.
The next one is, I talked last week about the Canon SD870, really nice digital camera, but Kodak sent me their new Easy Share V1253. Now, Leo, this camera is not only a gorgeous looking thing, it comes either in white or black, but it's got the 16:9 screen on the back of it. So you're looking really at a high definition. And by the way, they claim that you can take, when you take your SD card out here or connect it to the Easy Share, you can run high definition on your TV. The output on that, you get 12, this is Leo, 12.4 megapixels.
Wow.
Unbelievable on a camera.
And so it's but it's a wide picture.
It's got the three and almost a 3.5-inch LCD on it.
Wow.
I mean, it's fantastic display on it. And it's got, when you press the power button, the things light up in blue, so you know immediately what's on and what's not. You got one button to go to video, one button to go to pictures, and you could also make it 4x3. And it's got 3x optical zoom on it, and just a really cool camera. And the price on it, Leo, list is $299, but I'm finding it as low as $235. I told you I had my dog group up there this last weekend, and I'll bet you a half a dozen people saw this camera and were buying it this weekend. They kept calling me, where could I get it? Amazon has it, but there are prices that I found as low as $235 on this camera.
Yeah, because Amazon's charging list. Of course, it's a new camera, and it usually takes a while before they...
Yeah, so take a look at this, but it is just a really neat camera. Again, you can get it in black or white. It runs Windows XP, you run on Windows XP, and also Macintosh OS 10.3. And I have right in here an 8 gig that uses the new high-capacity card.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Kodak EasyShare 12 version, or V1253. The next item, I've been, and I know you've talked about it once in a while, rechargeable batteries. Oh, by the way, this camera, as well as the Canon, they use the lithium. You know, it's not a AA or AAA. Right. It's just the regular battery. And you get quite a few pictures on them. Sometimes
I think that's fine unless you travel and you can't plug in. And then I like it when you can use AAs because you can...
I do also. And then I'll be talking about some cameras.
But it makes a camera bigger. It gives it, it's lower life. I mean, I think the lithium is good, in most cases.
And if you buy an extra battery, you're all set on that.
Right.
But I want to talk about rechargeable batteries. I've been a big fan of rechargeable batteries for years and years and years. And I watched them, Leo, come out with MHA, which is the capacity. And they started out like at 400 milliamp hours is what it stands for, MHA. Then now... They had 2,000, 2,100, right, 2,300.
Right. Slowly inching up.
We're up to 2,700
really?
Milliamp.
Wow.
Yeah, 2,700. Now, that to me.
These are for nickel metal hydride, by the way.
Nickel metal hydride. It's either AA or AAA. This company I'll be talking about, I think you're familiar with the company, but it's Maha.
Oh, yeah. I use Maha.
Which is the power. Yep. I think you like those batteries.
Yep,
and I wanted to check them out because one of my favorite batteries was Maxell. And Maxell, there's no secret, was made by Sanyo. Sanyo, I think, is probably the best rating. Sanyo GE batteries, they're made in Japan. They were excellent, and Maxell has decided to get out of the battery business, so I was looking for another source. So I heard you talk about PowerX and some other people, so I wanted to check them out. But I am very impressed. First of all, it's one of the few companies that I know of, Leo, on these AA batteries will give you a five-year warranty. Now, you might say, geez, 5 years. Well, let me tell you, I've been playing around with some batteries from another company. I won't name the company, but they have sent me batteries every year. And I just happened to go, the next thing I'm going to be talking about will be a charger, and we'll discuss that. But I found out that, you know, after less than a year, I'm getting some of the batteries are putting out one-fourth or one-fifth of what an MHA is. Now, so that means if it's 2,700 milliamps, that means it's going to last a long time in your camera or whatever gadget you're running on. So these Maha PowerX batteries, five-year warranty, and they're very inexpensive. Basically, I think one of the distributors that I have gave you the link for cells. You can buy a package, I think, of eight of them, and they're under $3 a piece. And when you start thinking of how many AAs you go through.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a great deal. I don't know why people don't use them, frankly. I mean,
absolutely. In fact, I've got a lot of dispensers that use AAA and stuff. By the way, the AAA batteries are 1,000 milliamp hours, and the AAs are 2,700.
I use these in my camera strobe. I use them in a lot of devices. They're not good for flashlights or remote controls because, like all nickel metal hydride batteries, they drain slowly. So,
and by the way, give you how they do drain, 1% a day.
Right.
Okay, so if you figure that you have batteries in storage,
a couple of months, they're worthless.
That's yeah. You yeah.
So
lost
you don't
60%.
Put them in a flashlight because that's not a good emergency device. But for everything else, I guess remote controls. If you don't mind changing them, and right. I tell you, you save so much money and it's good for the landfill. Hey, we got 2 minutes, so
okay.
Let's get
anyway. The last item I'll talk about is the charger that Maha makes, and they have a brand new charger. It's called the 9000 Leo, and this charger is just phenomenal. What this thing does, it's got a beautiful LCD. Fluorescent display on it with nice big numbers on it, and it's called the MHC9000, and an analyzer for double A's and triple A's. So if you get yourself some rechargeables, and you know I have lots of them, I want to check these out. But this thing will do 5 different tests. It will charge the batteries, it will refresh and analyze them, it will break them in. So when you get new batteries, you want to go through the break in, and it will also discharge them because every once in a while you want to discharge these. And then it will cycle through and it will perform up to 12 times with a discharge capacity stored in memory. And this charger is like $69.95. I found it at your distributor. I think it's Thomas or whatever.
That's who I like. It's Thomas Dash
Distributing. It's on sale for $53 or whatever. So I gave you the links for both the batteries and the charger.
That's a lot for a charger, but I guess if you want a good
Leo,
one.
If you want, like, for example, these other batteries I told you that I thought were good batteries, I went and checked, like, 4 of them, and 2 of them come up absolutely horrible as far as the testing percent.
Ron, we're out of time. I thank you so much. Ron Rosberg, the Gadget Guru, joins us every week on The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
And you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack.
8888 Ask Leo, that's the number.
In another part of the world. And you may find yourself.
Ron's jamming more and more products in and getting longer and longer. I don't know what we're going to do. 4 products this time from the Gadget Guru. He just loves those products. 8888 Ask Leo. I apologize to those of you still hanging on, but I appreciate your patience. Let's get right to the phones and get through as many as I can here quickly as I can. Chris in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I just love listening to Talking Heads. I just let that song go on and on. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's get right back to the phones, get as many calls as we can on the air here. Chris is on the line from San Diego. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking the call. My daughter has been calling you for the last 2 weekends, and she's got a computer with an XP, and she was trying to load on a game, and it wouldn't read it in the drive, but the drive reads other programs, and then when we take the same game and put it on other computers, it works. Was wondering if you had a workaround or if I have to take this back.
What's the name of the game, just out of curiosity?
It's Sims 2.
Okay. They put copy protection on it. And unfortunately, the way the copy protection works is it makes the disc damaged in a certain spot. And what's happening is that most drives can handle that damage, but her drive can't. It says, this is a bad disc. You should take it back, and you should try to get another one, and it might be that you'll be able to read it. If not...
Was that because... Was it? I don't think it was loaded on any other computers.
No. It's just the way this copy protection works. It's non-standard, to be honest with you, and it means that it's modifying the CD in a non-standard way, and some drives go, "What's this? It's messed up." The way most of this copy protection works is they create a defect, a physical defect on the disk, and then check for that defect. If it's there, the program runs. If it's not there, they think, "Oh, you copied the disk," because you can't copy a physical defect.
Okay.
The problem is so this physical defect is baffling your drive, as it often does. And this is why I hate copy protection. Because it causes all sorts of problems. Yeah, I take it back.
I think the problem I had is this has been like 2 months now.
Yeah, they may or may not take it back. If you're exchanging it for the same disc or the same program, there shouldn't be a problem. Because then the problem with games is they think, oh, they would copy them and then they're bringing them back. But you're exchanging it for the same product. You're saying, look, it just won't read on this computer.
Okay.
And if not, then if the store won't take it back, then go to Maxis, the manufacturer, and say, dudes, Your crappy copy protection is breaking my machine, and I want my money back.
And that's called Maxis?
Yeah, that's the company that makes The Sims.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure who the distributor is. It might be EA. I can't remember. But, you know, go to the company that published it and say, I want some satisfaction here. Either a disc that works in my machine or my money back. And it's their fault.
I appreciate it. And on a personal note, we want to get you back on eBay Radio with Griff. This is Chris from WS Radio.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. I'd love to come back on.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about eBay Radio. This is like one of the biggest internet radio shows in the world.
Yeah, it's huge. They had, of course, it's eBay's show. It's on our network. Over 200,000 listeners last month.
Wow.
On eBay Radio.
Isn't that amazing? And where can they find that? Just go to
if you go to WSradio.com, we just signed up our 100th show, but eBay Radio, the Ask Griff show, is after your show from 3 to 5 Pacific time. That's the call-in show. And then we have a Tuesday show on WS Radio from 11 to 2 Pacific time. And then, of course, everything's archived and podcasted for listening on demand.
That's great. Griff's a great guy.
He loves you.
Yeah, we had him on.
You gave him his first break.
I was going to say, we had him on Call for Help, and he did such a great job, and he's just a star. Hey, thanks for the call, Chris.
My daughter thanks you. I'll take this back. And my computer guy's been gone the last week. And I said, well, Leo can give me the right answer.
It's certainly copy protection. My daughter is very big into The Sims, too. I think it's around 12 and 13. They just really get into it. And it's just, you know, it happens all the time. The new BioShock has got Secure ROM on it. They put these really invasive, annoying copy protection schemes. BioShock copies software onto your computer without your permission, the Secure ROM protection software, and even if you uninstall BioShock, the Secure ROM sticks around. It sticks around. Doesn't give you a chance to uninstall it. Doesn't even say it's installed. I don't think that should be acceptable. It's frankly why I don't, I try not to play games on PC anymore. It's unfortunate because many of the best games are PC only. But I stick with the Xbox or the PlayStation 3 just because I don't have to deal with that. I don't want to put that mess on my computer. Tony in Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Tony.
Hello, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you? Hey.
I have a question about PDF files. I have a brochures with text and graphics, and I would like to be able to edit them and bring them out to an application of some kind where I see all the text and the images, and I can save the images if I want. I have Adobe Acrobat 8 Pro, and I have read the help files, and I've been on the internet and everything and the forums, but I don't see the possibility of exporting it to an editable format in another application where I can have full reign of the editing.
So this is your document. This is your document, though, right?
I did not create it, no.
Yeah, and so that's the issue, is that PDF is designed to protect the creator of the original. Uh-huh. So if he set it so that you can't modify it, you can't modify it, even if you have the Pro, you know, Acrobat Pro. If he may, you know, you can set a document so that it can be modified. But most of the time when people create PDFs, the whole part of the point is that it's an unmodifiable document. So if you're working with somebody else's document and you want to modify and put it out in another form, that's exactly what PDF is stopping. Now, often you should try this. You can cut and paste the text, but you may not be able to do that. It just depends on what protections they've put on that document. And that's one of the reasons people use PDF as opposed to, say, just sending out a Word document. By the way, Foxit, FOXITsoftware.com, has a great PDF creator and reader that I prefer to Adobe's, frankly. Leo Laporte here. More to come. I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, with another hour to go talking high tech at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 8888-ASK-LEO. You want to talk about technology, and I mean technology. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, digital cameras. I'll talk about the beeper on your belt. I don't care. If it's got a chip in it, let's talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number to call. Before time ran out last hour, we were talking with Tony about editing PDF files. And I mentioned very quickly as I was running the great Foxit program from foxitsoftware.com. They have a PDF editor you could try before you buy. And that's what I would suggest. If the PDF is protected, I don't know if this will work on protected PDFs. Now, there are ways to unprotect PDFs, but I'm not sure I want to encourage that. It's very reasonable. It's $100. So it's much less expensive than Adobe's Acrobat. And it does a very good job of editing. And it will, I'll say this, it will edit more documents than Acrobat will. Foxit does a great job. It's Foxit, F-O-X-I-T, software.com. And probably worth taking a look at least download and try before you buy. Now we've got DC back from Santa Clarita. Hello, DC. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I have a question. I was on Craigslist and I was trying to send out my resume, and then I got an error message that says that could not be delivered and will remain in your Outlook until it can be delivered. Verify that you have addressed this message correctly. Check your SMTP serving setting and mail preferences, and verify any advanced setting with your system administrator.
So there. And if you don't know what that is, well, we don't care. That just shows you how geeky Craigslist is, doesn't it?
Wow.
Wow. Okay, let me talk about a little bit about what's going on there. First thing to do, and your email program would do this as well, is just to make sure you've got a properly formed address. So if, and sometimes I'll do this, I'll accidentally, there'll be a comma, and you know, I've typed an extra character in the email address, or I did something wrong. So just really make sure that you've got the address right, the outbound address right.
You mean like my email address, or the
Let me ask you: is this a form you're filling out on Craigslist?
No, it's my resume. I'm going on to the jobs.
Yeah, I understand that, but how are you? So you're filling
sending
out
it to the employer.
Okay.
With my, you know.
Got it. So you're mailing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the same error message you'd get from Outlook if an address were malformed. So if there's just an error in the address, look at the address. Make sure. Sometimes it's hard to see these little typos. Does that make sense?
Usually when I click onto the person that I want to send it to, they already have their address already in there. So all I have to do is just type in the main body and then click, and it sends it off.
Well, and in that case, the person you're trying to send it to may have put a typo in his own address.
Oh, okay.
That's essentially what Craigslist is telling you, is we can't mail this.
Oh.
And there's nothing you can do about it if this guy has foolishly put the wrong address. Is there a way to see the address? Probably not, huh? They probably protect it.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole idea on Craigslist. They don't want, you know.
They'll have a certain number, and then Craigslist after that making them, you know, a mystery because they don't want people to know.
For privacy, yeah.
Yeah.
So you could send a message to Craigslist support and say, you know what, I'm trying to send this resume out to this guy, and I keep getting this message. Copy and paste the message in there. And I bet you anything what they'll do is they'll go back and they'll look at the email message that he provided, the employer provided, and say, oh, yeah, he forgot the at sign or something dumb like that.
Okay.
But
so
there's,
I don't
nothing,
have to...
there's nothing you could do about it.
Okay. Is there something I need to do in making sure that with, when I'm with DSL Extreme that I have the right...
well, let me ask you this. Does outbound email work for you?
Outbound email?
Yeah, you can send emails, right?
Yeah.
I'm surprised at this error message from Craigslist. There's one thing that is a little odd is that they mention your email server, your SMTP server. That's probably, I think that's a bug. I think what's happening is Craigslist is sending you the error message they're getting. And the error message they're getting includes this additional information about make sure your SMTP server is properly configured. But that's not the problem. It's a malformed email address, and there's nothing you can do about it because it's the guy gave the email address wrong when he filled out the form on Craigslist. So, you know, you could send a message to Craigslist tech support. You could, if you knew who this employer was, but you don't, of course. But if you knew, you could send them in a message saying, hey, you know, look at your listing on Craigslist because it's screwed up. But otherwise, you have no recourse. I guess you just can't apply for that job. But I would keep an eye on it because you know what? No one else can either. And eventually, this guy's going to figure out what he did. And he's going to fix it. So I'd go back every day or so and try to send him your resume. Just in case. James in Richmond, VA. Oh, before I talk to you, James, hold on just a second. I just want to mention, somebody mentioned in the chat room, and we were talking to Chris about his daughter not being able to do the Sims 2 game. Somebody in the chat room said, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's a DVD. Make sure they're doing it in a DVD drive. I didn't even think of that. So if that game is a DVD, you've got to use a DVD drive to install it, obviously. All right, James, sorry about that. Richmond, VA, good to talk to you. Welcome to the Tech Guy Show.
Hey, thanks, Leo, for taking my call. Really appreciate it. Just a personal note real quick. I'm legally blind, and I've been watching you since back in the screensaver days. And you guys have really done a lot to help me out. I've learned a lot. I install my own RAM.
Yay. Hard drive.
Yeah, it's I love doing it.
That's really great. You know, Patrick's still working, my old screensaver's co-host. In fact, now he's doing a show with another one of our co-hosts, Jessica, on Revision 3 on Kevin Rose's. Basically, Kevin Rose is trying to bring back Tech TV. At revision3.com, R-E-V-I-S-I-O-N, the number 3.com. And the new show he does with Jessica Corbin is called Techzilla. You've seen it, I guess.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. I haven't had a chance to go check it out yet, but it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, well, it's just brand new. Just the first episode just came out. And, it, you know, I have to say, it looks a lot like the screensavers. It's really fun to see them back together again. That's wonderful.
I can't wait, but I'm hoping you can help me out with an issue I've got.
Yes, sir.
I work for an employer, and we have to have these huge division meetings, you know, 200, 300 people, and we record them onto DVD. And we've got about 100 to 200 folks that are out remotely that we need to send the video to. Well, our contractor gives us these DVDs. And now I have been tasked with putting the file, the video, on our company intranet. Well, the problem is our contractor, you know, gives me these DVDs, and all I get are VOB files, these VOB files.
Right.
So I need a way to take these files and either put them in an AVI format or a WMA format, something that I can use to put on our intranet. And I have not found anything that I've been, I've been fearful of installing anything on my own PC because I can't do it at work. I have to do it at home. And I need a portable format, and I need something I can trust. I just haven't really found anything. Was wondering if you might have a suggestion.
Windows or Mac?
Windows, okay. Sadly.
I would use a program.
I want to go Mac so bad, but it's price prohibitive,
yeah.
And you know, I just don't have the time to learn something new, so I'm sticking with what I got.
You may actually end up finding that you have to get a new computer because what you want to do is so time-consuming. You're converting. A VOB file is essentially a blob containing both the audio and the video. The audio is in AC3 format. The video is in MPEG-2 format. So what you're going to do is you're going to get a program that demuxes or separates the audio and video out of that VOB file and then converts them.
And I can't use Nero for that?
You can't. Nero may or may not be able to do that. I'd certainly try. I'll tell you a free program that will. It can actually convert it right into MPEG-4 format, which is probably what you want to put up on the net anyway. It's called Handbrake.
Handbrake, okay.
Yeah, it was originally a Mac program, has now been ported to Windows, and does a great job on Windows. It's Handbrake, Handbrake, and the website is handbrake.m0k.org. But you could also Google Handbrake, and they have a Windows version. The Windows version has been a little flaky and buggy, but is now pretty reliable, and it does the job. And what it'll do is it's a ripper. It's designed for ripping commercial DVDs, but it doesn't matter whether it's commercial or not. It's doing the same thing. It just doesn't have to remove copy protection from yours.
Yeah, and I told your screener, I'm not trying to do anything illegal.
I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, even if you are trying to copy a commercial DVD, that's fine, but I know you're not.
Well, if it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Ripping, you know, copy-protected stuff, it would be my luck. The authorities would knock on my door. I'm the one that all the bad stuff happens.
Well, I don't think anybody's going after people who do it onesie, twosie, for personal use. And frankly, I'd love to see somebody try because I think that'd be an interesting court case. You do own that DVD after all.
Right, exactly.
So in any event, this is not a problem because it's your stuff. It's unprotected. So Handbrake doesn't have to do the hard part of removing copy protection, but it doesn't matter. It still does the other part, which is convert a VOB into a format that you can use. And it has a variety of formats. You'll have to decide what format you want to go to, what you want to have on the internet. Have they told you what the internet format needs to be?
They don't care as long as it's playable in Windows Media, because that's the only one that they're allowing on their network.
Okay, then it probably wouldn't want to be H.264 or MPEG-4. You might want to look at, there are other programs. Nero should do this. There are programs like DVD2AVI that'll do it. Almost any ripping program will do it, because it's kind of what a ripper does.
And I've had take like TV shows that I've recorded on my Windows Media PC, and I've had Nero like make DVDs for me out of TV shows that I've created with menus, and it's done a lot of elaborate stuff, and I've seen it edit movies from my camcorder. I just haven't been able to find, and it's not the most user-friendly thing, but it's very powerful.
Handbrake is great. It will convert to AVI. It's free to try. Don't spend an hour on it. You know, just download it, try it with one little clip, and see if it works. I think it will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to gotomeeting.com, click the orange try it free button, use my name Leo as the promo code. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Talking high tech with you. I'm so glad you're here. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. All week long, you know, I continue to talk tech. Oh, I can't stop. The weekends aren't enough. I have to do it Monday through Friday as well. And we do it on the internet. And there are a lot of shows you can find. You'll find them all at twit.tv, T-W-I-T.tv. Every once in a while, somebody sends me an email saying, Leo, you know that Twit is, you know, an insult? And yeah, I know. It stands for This Week in Tech. Get it? And I think it's kind of funny that it's Twit. But twit.tv, T-W-I-T.tv. The big shoe is Twit, This Week in Tech, which is a weekly roundtable discussing the issues in technology, and you bet we'll be talking about the iPhone this week, as well as Halo 3 and a lot of other things. In fact, I've got a columnist on this week, Don Reisinger, who wrote a very interesting column I talked about on the last show on CNET.com, saying Microsoft should pull Vista. It's such a flop. They should just give up and go back to XP. That should be interesting. We also do shows on security, Windows, Mac. Lot of interesting content. It's a little geekier if you're serious about this stuff. If you're a tech enthusiast, twit.tv is the place to go. Our website for this show is techguylabs.com, of course. And we have a chat channel that is so much fun, irc.dslextreme.com. You can join us there. And my blog is leoville.com/blog. So there's a bunch of plugs. Get them all out of the way at once. Moving on to our next caller, it's Nicole in Houston. Hello, Nicole. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. What's happening?
Well, I'm having some issues with Joomla. I'm hoping maybe you can help me with.
Oh, cool. Joomla is a what we call a CMS, or content management system. It's written in PHP, and I'm just filling people in. I know you know this, Nicole. And are you using it for a website? What are you using it for?
Yeah, I have a little side project website that I do stay busy.
Cool. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not a Joomla expert. I used Mambo for a while, which is the kind of the predecessor to Joomla, but I am not an expert on Joomla. What's going on?
Well, everything's good with it, except for when I go to edit any of the like tech modules, and the problem is slightly different in IE and Firefox. I've tried them both. I can't do anything with the text field in IE. It's just blank. And in Firefox, the whole thing's black, and the text is there, but it's all black.
Is this in the administrative interface where you're trying to add content, or?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not able to enter any text.
I can text in Firefox, but the text will be black and the background is black, so it's at, you know,
something wrong. There's definitely something wrong. You know, I don't know what's going on with that. That sounds like you're using a standard template for right now for your Joomla?
Yes.
You haven't modified the template.
No, I have, but I've pretty much the only thing I've changed is images.
Okay. Yeah, that wouldn't make a difference. You know, I think you're going to have to go to the Joomla forums on that one, Nicole. I'm sorry to say. I don't know exactly what's going on. It sounds like something's wrong, and I'm not sure where. It could be in the CSS.
I reinstalled, and the problem just remained the same.
Yeah.
And that was horrible.
I know. Well, that makes it unusable, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'm a big WordPress fan myself. What kind of site are you doing?
Just kind of personal entertainment for myself.
When I tried Joomla or Mambo, and I tried a little bit of Joomla, I found a lot of people love it, but I found it a little more complicated than I needed. And I think probably certainly for my blog, I use WordPress. I've set up maybe a half dozen WordPress sites now and found it very easy to work with. There are a lot of great templates, very flexible. Because so many people use WordPress now, there are a lot of plugins and add-ons and so forth. I also use Drupal, which is much more like Joomla. It's a heavy-duty content management system. I use that for my Twit site, and we're going to use it for the Tech Guy site. But frankly, I think most people, WordPress is a better place to start. Drupal is extremely flexible and powerful, like Joomla, but I think they're overkill for a lot of people. My suggestion, Nicole, go to the forums. There's a lot of very helpful people there. Say this is what's happening. I bet you anything, you'll get a response right away from somebody who's had the same exact thing happen and know exactly what to do about it. That's one of the great things about these open source, community driven projects is that you get support from everybody. Everybody's invested in it. Everybody is a part of it, and people really are helpful. I find they're really great. Good luck, Nicole. Thanks for listening to the show. Sandy, Colorado, Leo LaPorte. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, Sandy. I see a big rap sign in my face. I'm going to have to take a break. Can you hang on and we'll get to your question in a second?
Sure.
Oh, poor Sandy. Well, tell me the question and then we'll take a break and we can maybe answer it after.
That's okay. I have 56K dial-up and I have Windows XT. A friend who has become a tech told me to get rid of Adaware and get rid of my Norton internet security and gave me a long list of these so-called free things that I could download that would do so much better and take up less room and all this kind of thing. Well, I tried doing every one of them, and most of them wouldn't even download, and the ones that would wanted money up front.
Right.
But he said, don't go to Norton or Adaware because they're so dangerous to your machine.
That's a great question, Sandy. If you don't mind taking your answer on the air, I want to spend some time on this one, so we will right after this. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. Leo LaPorte here, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. A few more minutes in the show. So a great question. Wonderful question. And I'd like to underscore this about protecting your Windows machine. Now, I'm going to say some stuff that you've probably heard before, but it really bears repeating. First of all, yes, you probably should have anti-spyware and antivirus on there. And frankly, the free anti-spyware from Microsoft.com/defender, or Adaware. Adaware and SpyBot, okay, they're good, they're free. But frankly, Microsoft.com/defender, that's a good one. I don't know why I told you to get rid of Adaware. And there are a number of good free antiviruses. Probably the best is from AVG. Now, the reason it asked for money is you downloaded, there's a commercial version and a free version. But free.avg.com. It's not as good as a commercial antivirus. You know, I recommend Non-32, which is about $30 or $40. It's very inexpensive. And it does a much better job on both viruses and spyware. But having said that, the most important thing is your behavior. Because the truth is, viruses spread faster. Is that my iPhone? It is in airplane mode, and it shouldn't be making any noise. I'm going to throw it over there. Ooh. Maybe that'll help. The most important thing is to change your behavior. A virus spreads so fast through email and over the internet these days that it takes at least, you're vulnerable for at least 24 hours. That's how long it takes the antivirus companies to update their virus. And that's presuming you update all the time. Furthermore, there are things that can happen to your computer that no antivirus can stop. Phishing scams and so forth. So it really is important that you change your behavior first and foremost. In fact, the real security experts I know often don't use any security software. They might use a router as a firewall, but that's it. And that's because they believe, and I believe they're correct, that their behavior is impeccable, so they don't have to worry. So what not to do? Don't open email attachments. That's the number one way you get viruses, email attachments. Don't click links in email. That's how you get phished. And phishing, by the way, can not only get you, go send you a place where you enter in a password, but it can send you to a website that will infect your computer just by visiting the website. So if you get a link in an email, don't click it. If you really want to go to that place, copy and paste it or type that address in by hand, but do not click links in email. Don't open attachments. Don't click links in email. Then you want to make sure you turn on automatic updates, have them install automatically. That's because when Microsoft ships out an update, it's because there's a problem, there's a security issue, and the minute that update comes out, the hackers know what the problem is. So you start being vulnerable the minute those updates go out. That's why you have to apply them the minute they're available. You should probably lock down your browser. Now, if you're on Windows XP, use Firefox. If you're on Vista, you're much more protected. Internet Explorer 7 with the internet protection turned on is actually very good. So that's your choice. Firefox on XP or IE7 with protection turned on Vista. Then, of course, you want to make sure you back up regularly. You don't download files from the internet unless you're absolutely sure they're safe. And this is where teenagers get in trouble because they use these music sharing sites. They download files, and often those are spyware or viruses. So the free antiviruses aren't bad, but they're backup. They're not your first line of defense. Microsoft.com/defender, that's the free anti-spyware. AVG from free.grisoft.com. Antivir is another good one. That's from free-av.com. But no antivirus, even the Nod32 that I think the world of, the best antivirus out there in my opinion, will protect you against your bad behavior. And that's the bottom line. Now, Norton, I've been very negative about Norton Internet Security, Norton 360, and the evil Norton 2006. I had a long conversation with Symantec. They said, we want to talk to you, Leo, because we know how much you hate us. And we've worked really hard with Norton 2007 and especially Norton 2008 to stop slowing computers down, to be more responsive, to fix the problems you've complained about. So I'm downloading it. I'm going to use it, and we're going to try it. We're going to benchmark it and so forth. But I believe them when they say they understand that they did badly for you with Norton 2006 and Norton 2007, and mostly 2006, and they really have worked hard to improve the product. So I'm not going to say Norton's a bad choice at this point. I'm neutral on it. I don't know until I do the testing. But frankly, even with the best in the world, it's your behavior that makes the difference. You're on dial-up. I think you're less likely to get bit by these bugs. Because everything's so slow, you're less likely to do things like download music, do some of the dangerous things that kids do on high-speed networks. So you'll probably be all right. No need to be exorbitantly paranoid. Finally, it's important to have a firewall or some sort of protection against the outside world. With dial-up, it's less important. But if you're on broadband, you absolutely should have a broadband router. That's the best possible firewall. And if you're not in on dial-up, for instance, turn on Windows Firewall. That's fine. That'll give you adequate protection. Sandy, Colorado, Leo Laporte. Oh, wait a minute. That was Sandy. I'm sorry. Thank you, Sandy. I hope that helps you. Don't feel too afraid. The internet isn't an evil, bad place. If you take these precautions and you change your behavior, you're going to be fine. Now, G.A. Hart in Hemet, California. Hey, G.A.
Hey, this is Gerhard.
Gerhard. I see. That was a phonetic spelling, supposedly. Hi, Gerhard. Right. How are you?
Leo, I'm so happy to talk to you. Wonderful. Good afternoon. I'm sitting in front of my IBM ThinkPad T30 Windows XP Pro, and I'm trying to install a program that I've been using for years and years on other computers, even on other XPs. And the moment I put the CD in, you know, it starts running, doing the auto install. Message comes up, says this program requires at least 3 MB of free virtual memory to run.
Ah.
And I'm saying, duh.
Huh? What's the name of the program, just out of curiosity?
Oh, it's called Cool Edit Pro.
Love that program.
Which is an older version. Yeah. You know, the company doesn't exist anymore that originally wrote this and sold this. It's been around for some time.
Oh, yeah. Every radio station I ever worked at used Cool Edit Pro. Well, once they started going computerized. And now I use its successor. Adobe bought it, of course, and I use Audition. In fact, I'm using it right now to record this show. Cool Edit Pro,
because
though, remember,
came...
Because
I use it a lot.
Yeah,
go ahead, sir. I couldn't hear you. I will shut up now.
No, you don't need to shut up. Cool Edit Pro...
Yeah, I will, I said. Sorry.
Did Cool Edit Pro say it works with XP? I guess it has, because you've used it with XP, yeah?
Yeah, I can go to friends' XP computers, and I run it on, of course, Windows 2000, you know, and this seems to be unique to this particular computer. I can go to...
Well, I would check to make sure that you have sufficient free space on your drive.
On a hard drive?
Yeah.
Oh, gazillion, but where? Because this is, there's virtually nothing on this laptop, you know, okay. I use it.
Then the next thing to do is to go into the virtual memory settings and make sure that they are...
Can you direct me? I'm not...
I can. So what you're going to do is right-click on My Computer and select Properties.
Okay. I'm right there. Right-click. And I look at Properties. I'm there. Go.
Click the Advanced tab.
Advanced.
And you'll see a Performance button.
Correct.
Under the
Settings.
Yep. Click the Settings.
Settings, we're there.
And now you should see a virtual memory. There's a whole area talking about how the maximum, the minimum, the drives, and so forth.
Yeah, I know. I've seen this before.
Yeah. And you want to let Windows manage it, frankly.
I need to go to advanced again. Yeah, there's the virtual memory.
It wasn't in performance. I'm sorry. It was in it's its own area. I'm doing this from memory. I only have Vista in front of me right now.
No problem, sir. We do it together.
Let Windows manage the memory. Don't have a maximum or minimum in there.
Okay, hang on.
Make sure...
Another tab here.
Yeah, you know what, Gerhard? I'm just going to let you go through this yourself because it's not great radio to walk somebody through this. But the key to this is don't set a maximum or minimum. Don't tell it what drive. Make sure it's on the drive, the C drive that has the most space. And say, let Windows manage it. Now, if that is... all the case, and you're still getting this, you have to have 3 MB of virtual memory, then there may be another issue. It may really be a compatibility issue. Cool Edit Pro is old, and it may not work very well on XP. And that would be not an uncommon response. That's the kind of error message you'd get if you tried to run an old program on a new operating system. It just wouldn't understand what it's getting back from the operating system, and it would misinterpret it as insufficient virtual memory or something like that. So make sure the memory is being managed properly. You might want to look at Adobe Audition, which is basically Cool Edit Pro, but more modern. Works very well, I think. Brian, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Brian.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. This is the first time I've been on the radio. I've been listening to radio for years.
Well, wonderful. Welcome. Don't be nervous. Don't be shy. There's just a few million people listening.
Well, that's nice to know.
What can I do for you?
I'm trying to set up a small home office network, and for some reason, one of my computers that I'm using, it's not accessible to the network that I'm setting up.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, we get this a lot, and it's very common, and it's because of security software in general. Either a firewall or a security program, a zone alarm. If you don't see the other system, you're sharing and you're doing everything right, then it's almost always a security program. Disable them or temporarily disable them and see if you can get it to work. If you can, then you need to make sure that those programs allow Windows file sharing to work. There's a wonderful, wonderful website I recommend for anybody trying to set up a home or office network, wants to learn more. This site has not only tutorials, but actually troubleshooting guides that will walk you through exactly this problem. It's called Practically Networked. Practicallynetworked.com. And you'll see right on the left there, troubleshooting and tutorials. Go to the troubleshooting guides and you'll see exactly this problem. Practicallynetworked.com. Very useful. It was originally, I think, a site for Linksys owners, but they've just got so much stuff on there now. They've really done a great job of making this a useful place to go when you're having trouble with networking. More of your calls to come. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo, that's my number. Virginia, San Juan Capistrano. Let's get another call. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. I have a HP Pavilion laptop, and I'm running XP. And when I move folders from one place to another, if I drag them or use the copy to or move commands, often then they're inaccessible, and it won't let me open them.
That's interesting. Where are you moving them?
On my computer from one section to another.
I knew it was on your computer. I'm just wondering, are you moving them outside of your documents folder?
No.
Okay.
It's in the document folder.
It's within the document folder, and you're getting... What you're getting is called a permissions error.
Correct.
The way a move works, by the way, is you copy the file and then delete the old one. So it's still a copy. And and what's happening is the operating system has a default permissions setting that it will set. And whenever a copy is made, apparently, for some reason, this default permission setting is a little aggressive and is locking you out.
Yes, it is.
Which isn't right. This is XP, you said, huh?
Yes. Huh. In fact, I had to go to the... what is that thing that you have? I'm sorry.
Carbonite.
To get the file back.
The one back.
Thank goodness he had a backup.
Yes.
You know, on a Linux machine, this is called the UMask, and it's an easy thing to modify. I have no idea why this is doing this in XP. I'm sure it's somewhere hidden deep within the XP registry or something. But for some reason, it's changing those permissions when you copy.
Yes. And I can do a save as, but like if I needed to move several things while I'm doing some work and I have a new category, so I make a new folder for that new category of work, and I want to move several things into it at one time or quickly just to do the drag and drop, that's when this
very
happens.
Very
odd. In different programs, it happens in Excel and Word and Pictures.
It's an NTFS file system or a FAT32 file system? NTFS?
NTFS.
Okay. And was this a corporate computer at one point?
No.
It's your own computer?
It's my own computer, yes.
Okay.
And it's always only been my computer. It's about a year old.
Well, I have an article from Microsoft that will help you solve this problem, but it's pretty tricky. It's a registry modification, and for some reason, your policy settings are screwed up, and it's telling XP, when you copy a file, don't copy the access control settings, create new permissions. And I don't know why it would do that. It's really annoying, but let me tell you, you sounds like you got some help there. What you're going to do, you're going to do to go to support.microsoft.com, and you're going to go to TechNote. Support.microsoft.com. You're going to go to support note 310-316.
310-316.
And there are two little registry modifications you're going to need to make. And so this is going to be somebody who's handy with a registry editor. You're not going to mess yourself up if you do exactly what it says. don't freelance, though. Don't go out there and say, I wonder what happens when I change this. I'm sure you wouldn't do that.
I hope not, no.
No freelancing allowed. But if you follow the instructions carefully, I believe that's what's going on, is that for some reason that I'm not completely sure about, it's changing the permissions as you make a copy.
But I couldn't figure out what to do with it.
Yeah. And, you know, you can't go in and reclaim those files, but you don't want to do that every time you make a copy. So I want you to, this modification will fix this problem. It's a very strange problem. I'm not sure why it happened, but you know, computers do strange things, sometimes seemingly on their own.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happened here.
Okay. Then I have a question. When I tried to get into my computer on Firefox to listen to you with audio streaming, it wouldn't allow me to do that, but it works just fine on Explorer. Is there something for that?
Many of our, I seem to be taking a lot of questions these days for our station's streaming issues. Many stations who stream the radio show are using Windows-specific streaming for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. And sometimes Firefox won't do as well with that as Internet Explorer will. It will work. It will work. You may require messing around with the settings in Firefox. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not. It's there's so many different stations. I presume you're trying to listen on KFI. Is that where you're listening on KFI? Yeah.
Yes.
They did something lately, because I've been getting like two or three calls a show from... I'm going to have to talk to them this week and find out what they've done that's different. One of the things that they did change is that you're going directly through the KFI site, yes?
Yeah, and then I had one other thing. Like, I was trying to get in on the phone, of course. That's always hard because you're so popular. And so I went to the chat, but on the chat it says I'm not on a channel.
Oh, yeah, you have to. The channel that you have to join is Pound Tech Guy. So if you're using a chat client, not our Java client, but a chat client, type the number sign and then Tech Guy. And that's during the show only.
Okay, yeah, the number sign, okay.
And they're all very helpful in there. That's not a bad idea, especially for streaming issues.
Uh-huh.
They spend a lot of time in there helping people listen to the show on the internet.
Okay. All right, well, I'll. Is there a place that I could go on with the chat and not have a problem with getting on when you're not on, that I would chat with somebody else?
That's a little riskier because we don't moderate the chats when the show's not on. So it's a little wild west in there, Virginia. I don't want your tender ears to be turning bright red.
I just thought maybe I could leave a question that would be...
You know, we're going to set up... It's not yet set up, but we are going to set up a forum for our listeners to ask and answer questions, because I think that's a very good idea.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Virginia.
We appreciate your help.
Well, I hope it helps, but I'll tell you what, we're going to put this all in the show notes. I just sent the link to Sasha for this Microsoft article. It's pretty straightforward. You're going to click start, run, type regedit and modify it, and it should fix it. At least that's my hope. I do thank you for being here. I'm going to be back next week. We're going to do this all over again. Don't forget twit.tv for my shows all week long. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear The Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.